Welcome to Aspects of Riding with your host, James Kelly. For the next 60 minutes, we'll explore every aspect of riding, including how to create, format, and even sell your work. Now, let's get writing. Here's your host, James Kelly.
Welcome to Aspects of Riding. I'm your host, James Kelly, and my guest panelist is Morgan St. James. Our guest for today's show is author Jamie Deese, and the topic of today's show is Riding Without Boundaries. And it doesn't mean what you think. But anyway, before we get to our guest, my panel and I would like to read a few fun highlights of famous authors who made unlikely genre jumps. And Morgan, I'm going to let you start.
Oh, yeah. And this is one of my favorites, Ian Fleming. Fleming became world famous for his series of novels and two collections of short stories about international super spy Bond, James Bond.
If you've only known how many times I've heard that in my life.
You know, it's hard to imagine a less likely source for classic children's picture book than the creator of the martini-drinking, dam-betting, thug-slaying 007. But after telling his son Casper a series of bedtime stories about a car that can fly and float and alert the driver to danger, Fleming wrote the story down, and you'll never guess the name of what was born.
I never knew this until I researched.
I didn't either. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
And Jamie?
Roald Dahl is actually one of my favorites. I used to read his stories to my son. He's even more unlikely than Ian Fleming writing a children's book. He was the author of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, James and the Giant Peach, and Fantastic Mr. Fox, also Matilda, which is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
And he is also the author of such scandalous tales for adult eyes, including classic crime stories like Lamb to the Slaughter, in which a woman beats her husband to death with a frozen leg of lamb, then cooks a murder weapon and serves it to the policemen who come around to question her.
Wow.
You know, that was a Hitchcock. Hitchcock did that story.
Interesting. he also wrote stories collected in Kiss Kiss and Switch Bitch and the novel My Uncle Oswald, the greatest fornicator of all time.
That's amazing. From Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and the Giant Peach.
Chocolate's supposed to be an aphrodisiac.
I always wondered about those grandparents who were always in bed. What were they doing?
Well, A.A. Milne, did you know that A.A. Milne, author of Winnie the Pooh books, also wrote a popular whodunit? 4 years before creating Pooh, Piglet, and the rest, Milne wrote The Red House Mystery, a classic English country house locked room murder yarn in the Agatha Christie vein. His niece was on our show just like three or four shows back, Rihanna Milne.
Huh. These are all so surprising. You know, James, I didn't know any of these until you did your fantastic research.
The internet. I love the internet.
Me too. Our next one is Anne Rice. And, you know, she's a horror writer, and she's best known for her vampire novels, starting with Interview with a Vampire in 76. And she's written about witches and werewolves and mummies and angels, all of which fall comfortably under the supernatural rubric. But earlier in her career, she penned several novels that focused on a different sort of fantasy fiction, erotic novels of the BDSM variety, bondage and discipline, sadism and masochism. These include Exit to Eden, written as Anne Rampling, and the three Claiming of Sleeping Beauty novels, written as A.N. Roquelaure. I don't know if I pronounced that not right or not.
Yeah.
She was taking on a bit of a French persona there, exploring all of the variations of sexual coupling and sexual torment.
So you never know what's behind that author that you're reading about.
That's for sure.
Well, mine is Sidney Sheldon, and I actually had the honor of meeting Sidney Sheldon in 1996. And he was a writer and producer. He came to prominence in the 1930s, first working on Broadway plays and then in motion pictures, notably writing the successful comedy The Bachelor and the Bobby Soccer in 1947, which earned him an Academy Award. He went on to work in television, where his work spanned a 20-year period during which he created I Dream a Genie, Heart to Heart, And for 7 years, he wrote almost every single episode of The Patty Duke Show. And what I also know about that is that he met her in a commissary, and he decided to create the show around her persona when he met her in the commissary. He was one of the writers of the screenplay for the 1948 musical film Easter Parade, and sole writer for the 1950 musical film Annie, Get Your Gun. He became most famous after he turned 50 and began writing best-selling romantic suspense novels such as Master of the Game, The Other Side of Midnight, and Rage of Angels. He is the 7th best-selling fiction writer of all time. In total, he was the author of 18 novels, which sold over 300 million copies. All right. And again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Aspects of Writing with me, your host, James Kelly, and my panelist is Morgan St. James. Today's guest is Jamie Deese, and the topic of the show is Writing Without Boundaries. And Morgan St. James is our panelist, and she began her writing career when she was writing for about interior design. She writes in various genres. And Morgan, please tell us a little bit more about who you are to our audience.
Okay. If you're a regular listener, you've heard this song before. But James is right. I started out writing some articles about interior design, which was a total fluke, and went on to write magazine articles about other things like, well, some were interior articles, and I wrote about dementia. And then in the mid-90s, my sister and I, she was also a published writer, we decided to create our own funny mystery series. And that's when the Silver Sisters were born, but it took us 6 years to write the first book. And there are now 4 books in the series. We're starting work on the 5th. Altogether, I have 16 books in publication. And I'm doing a lot of umming.
Yeah. That's all right. I'll edit it out.
My first book was published when I definitely qualified for Medicare. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you're never too old to do these things. I've done a lot of things in my life, but writing has been my career for the past several years.
Well, I think Chancey was, 56 when he published his first book?
I was 66. Beat him by 10 years.
Well, it's never too late.
But, of course, I'm a perennial youth, so nobody knows.
Well, our guest for today is Jamie Deese. Jamie grew up in Maryland until moving to St. Petersburg, Florida in 2012 with her husband, Tom, son, Alex, and her dog, Lady. She is the author of Keeping Score, which she self-published in 2013. In 2015, Evernight Publishing published her second book, Ties That Bleed. Her most recent book, House Divided, was also self-published by Jamie. Your new name, Jamie, is Amy.
My
and is hot off the press. Jamie, please tell us a little bit more about yourself and your books.
Well, as you said, I grew up in Maryland. I went to the University of Maryland, and my first job was in D.C. I did public relations for lobbying groups. I did that for about 10 years, and then my husband's career really took off, and I started spending most of my time with my son, Alex, who got really involved in baseball. So that's really the genesis of my first book. And my third book, I was a baseball mom until just a few months ago, actually. His baseball career finally ended, and he's working full-time and going to school full-time. But my first book was about a mother's first summer with her son playing travel baseball, and that was loosely based on our adventures with his first summer. And House Divided is loosely based on the fact that I am a liberal Democrat, but my husband and my son are both conservative Republicans. So that's been really fun.
That's got to be. Thanksgiving had to be a blast.
Yeah, definitely a blast. And actually, my son is an intern in the White House.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's been very interesting. And this book is about a Democrat who's married to a Republican. And after the 2014 election, she loses her job and he becomes the next Sean Hannity. It's about how the dynamics in their marriage changes with her no longer working and him becoming a star. And also the very particular types of arguments that people have when they're on completely different ends of the political spectrum.
Wow. So I just want to know, your house isn't divided, I hope, in that there's no line down the middle. You live on one half, he lives on the other.
Well, sometimes a little bit. He's in his office watching the TV shows he likes to watch. He watches a lot of news, and I'll be in here watching, Outlander. It's Sunday night, so Outlander.
Well, you couldn't have picked a better topic to write about right now, I have to tell you. Oh my gosh. You already told us about House Divided, and you touched on the Soccer Mom. What now? The Soccer Mom book. Where did that come from?
Baseball Mom.
Oh, baseball. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's my son played baseball from the time he was 7 years old until just a few months ago, 23. And basically, when your kid is playing sports at the travel ball level, it consumes your life. And every weekend is about the tournaments, driving to the tournaments. There's private lessons, there's getting the equipment, there's more private lessons, there's deciding the team he's on isn't good enough, so finding another team. And then we sent him to a private high school that had an outstanding baseball program. And then there's the college recruiting, and the first college he went to wasn't a good fit, so his second year he went to junior college, and then his third year he went to another college.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, just very consuming, and a lot of politics, not of the DC variety, but of the, you know, the parent versus parent and the coach versus parent and the kid. Yeah, so there's a lot of drama. It was funny in retrospect. You know, they say the equation is humor is pain plus time. So when I had a little bit of distance from it was when I wrote the first book. You know, at the time, when things aren't working out for your kid, it can be painful, and there was a lot of ups and downs. Mm-hmm.
How did you get the idea of writing? Were you taking notes, or were you keeping a journal of some of this stuff? Or did you just one day say, hey, this stuff is good for a book?
It always felt like it was good for a book. It's interesting because, and James and I talked about this earlier, I was writing screenplays before I decided to write a novel. And a lot of my friends who were writing screenplays had decided to make their own movies, and I did not want to make my own movie. But self-publishing had gotten pretty big by then. It was starting to explode. And I decided to myself, well, I can write a novel, and if I can't get it traditionally published, I could self-publish it, and I bet that's not that hard. So that's actually what I ended up doing.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a website?
I do. It's http://jamiedeese.com.
Okay. And where can people find your books?
They're on the website, and they're also on Amazon.
Great.
Now, we want to spell out Deese. It's D-E-I-S-E. So it's
yes.
Jamie, JAMIDEISE.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I know sometimes things are spelled a different way than the way they sound.
Yeah, you know, even with mine, I write under the name Kelly, and some people want to put an extra E in there. One of the things that the reason we decided to talk about this today when it comes to writing without boundaries is because, Jamie, you write scripts as well. You know, you've tried to tackle that part of the industry, and you wrote these novels. You self-published these novels, even though one was published through a publisher. Mm-hmm. Morgan, you've done various novels in different formats, different genres.
And I've transitioned from traditional publishers to self-publishing as well.
And hundreds of articles.
600?
Yeah. So, yeah. So, you know.
Well, actually, that isn't even counting the earlier ones. This is like 600 articles about the craft and business of writing and interviews with people. But then I had all the other magazine articles that I wrote before.
Well, I'm going to let Morgan start off here with the topic of the day, which is writing about boundaries. And we're going to start off with the pros.
Okay. The pros of writing in different genres?
Yeah.
Is that what? Some people have the ability to do this and some don't. And it's really kind of fun to be able to switch gears. I have written things as diverse in my books as the funny mystery novels, the crime capers, you know, the things that give you a chuckle with over-the-top characters. And then I've co-authored things like the book up at the front, Incest, Murder, and a Miracle, which is a true story that I co-authored with the people who lived it. And I've also written No More Crying Angels, another true story co-authored with the person who lived it. And her No More Crying Angels was because she was so abused, she'd gotten to a point where she couldn't cry for herself, and she had an angel tattooed on the back of her shoulder to cry for her. Mm-hmm. And her happiest day was when she was able to cry for herself. And then I also wrote a fiction book called Betrayed that was based on real incidents that happened involving kidnap and rape and some things like that. So, you know, that's a huge departure mm-hmm. from what I was writing before. And since we were talking about children's books before, I also have one little Kindle book that is the very first book that I ever wrote. And it's a children's book, picture book, called LaRue the Llama Helps His Mama. It's a little 99-center on Amazon, and I've never really promoted it. It was just fun to do. The thing that I find, James and Jamie, is that when I'm writing one of the intense books, I have to write something funny alongside it because I get so inside the head of either the people or the characters that I'm literally living their pain in order to write it in the right voice. And so I've always written something side by side with it that is funny, that keeps my spirit up. When I first did Betrayed, I thought that people wouldn't buy a book by me about kidnap and rape and murder and all of that. So I used a pen name, and it was one of the worst decisions I ever made. And I later republished the book under my own name because I lost my whole audience. And interestingly enough, I was just telling James this before, I learned that readers will cross over from something that is humorous to something that is dramatic. But if they know you as a dramatic author, it's very hard to get the sales in something humorous. Mm. So it was exactly the opposite of what I thought.
Well, we're going to go into this. Actually, we're going to actually bring more of this up to the script here. I'm going to let you start off on page 4 there, Morgan. And we're going to talk about all the different reasons why you might want to go into various aspects of writing.
Okay, so am I on?
Yeah, that's you.
Okay. Good thing you edit. Good thing you edit. Good thing this isn't live. Okay, so it can be incredibly fulfilling to write something new that challenges you in unique and exciting ways. If you feel burnt out working on something that feels too similar to your previous works, having an exciting, fresh idea might keep you feeling inspired. Writing in multiple genres provides much more freedom and the ability to explore new ideas.
You know, you just went into why you did what you did. And Jamie, I'm just curious, did you set out to write 3 different novels or did it just happen?
So the vampire book.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
It did just, it just sort of happened. And listening to Morgan, I'm thinking about, yes, it's different genres, but I think there's a common thread. And for me, I really like strong female protagonists. Uh-huh. So in my vampire book, the protagonist is a vampire hunter for the FBI. And even though the book is paranormal and it's dramatic and several people die, she has a really biting sense of humor. So there's a lot of funny bits and sarcasm, at least in the dialogue. But yeah, I mean, I've got more interests than just minding my own personal life.
Didn't you tell me this was marketed as paranormal and romantic, I believe?
Yes.
Because the company that published your book for you, that's what their specialty basically is.
Yes.
Yeah.
They like erotic paranormal romance.
Okay. Well, you covered a lot there.
Sort of different than A House Divided.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. I mean, having the publican be a vampire. I mean, that might
or the baseball mom. Come on.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. So, Jamie, I'm going to let you take the next one.
Okay. So by branching out into a new genre, you may attract readers who wouldn't have found your work otherwise. If you only publish YA sci-fi, for example, your audience will only consist of YA sci-fi readers. But if you publish a YA thriller and readers love it, some of them may check out your previous works. You may end up cultivating a broader, wider readership.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, and it's kind of like what you just said.
Kind of like genre within the genre.
I think the hard part for someone who's self-publishing in particular is to figure out how did that work. You really wouldn't know until you go out there and do it. Like
no,
you, did.
You really don't. Yeah. And when I did the Arliss Adams thing, oh my God, I used a picture of myself like 20 years earlier with a big mane of red hair, and I bought a red wig in case I had to go out on any book signings. And I had to maintain a website and a whole persona and everything else. And it was such a relief to put Arliss to rest. It really was. Mm-hmm.
So you really went into character with that one.
Oh, I did. But now, you know, with the internet being so prevalent, I have been tossing around the idea. I have a book that's about half finished or maybe a third finished. And I've been tossing around the idea of maybe writing it under a male pseudonym and see what happens. I'll make that decision when the book is finished.
S.H. Montgomery, she wrote historical fiction. She has two books out, one, yeah, Whisper in the Blood and then Honor in the Blood. And then she recently helped pen a book with someone else that's children's books. And she called me concerned. She says, I used Sue Montgomery instead of S.H. Montgomery. You know, am I going to confuse the readers? And I told her, you don't have to market them together.
Right.
You know, have a separate website for your children's books because it is a different type following. And then, you know, have one for The Whisper in the Blood. And, you know, so I said, you don't have to combine them, because she was worried I should have just stuck with Sue Montgomery instead of going with S.H. Montgomery. No, you can still have that other pseudonym.
Well, I'll tell you, if I decide to do this other one under the pseudonym of a male, I already started looking at stock photos to decide what my guy is going to look like. He's going to be pretty hunky.
Just like the cover of Jamie's book. Which, by the way, we have your book on video, so you'll have to watch the video after this, Jamie. Are you there? Oh, I think we lost Jamie. Well, we're going to try and get her back. Yeah, and Morgan, I'm going to let you go ahead and read the next part here.
Okay. Having a versatility can have a number of advantages, and it's always a good idea to sharpen your skills as a writer. Being a little more versatile is one of the ways to do that. You know, perhaps a publisher will consider you for a project that never would have come your way otherwise. Or maybe you'll have other new opportunities. Being known as a versatile writer who can handle a variety of genres is always a plus.
And, you know, Jamie, we had, like I told you, we had Chris Keaton on our show,
mm-hmm,
who you know. And then we've had Gerard DeMargini on the show. What they both discovered is that it's great to be able to write in different genres, but not just in genres as far as, you know, from romance to dramatic to children's, but also across the spectrum when it comes to scripts or article writing or, you know, writing novels. And what I really liked about Gerard was that he's one of these who's willing to take on anything. He wrote about terrorism after the 9/11, which was a novel that just was phenomenal, that took off. And then he turned around and someone saw his writing and said, we want you to write something for us like a Western, which he'd never done. He thought, you know what? I'm going to tackle it just to see what happens. And then from there, every time someone offered him something, he's never turned it down. And this isn't script writing now. So he's actually writing scripts that have nothing to do with what he basically writes about. You know, he's finding that fascinating to be versatile like that.
Yeah, well, you know, when I had the first article published in a magazine, it was about dementia and Alzheimer's, because my mother was going through that. And the publishers of the magazine knew that I was an interior designer. And like about 6 months later, they contacted me and said, how would you like to write an article for us called Home is on the Hard Drive? Because so many people are going to home offices now. And I said, yeah, sure. I'll do that. And then they got hold of me to write another article on a different topic. Mm-hmm. So you just never know.
I think that's the thing that he was talking about. Is you don't want to turn anything away. You never know what's going to lead. I'm just going to say that his ended up turning into, they're doing the remake of Grizzly Adams. And he's one of the writers on that show. That's why you want to be versatile if you can. In the old days, you didn't. And we're going to get into that in a minute as well, where they would tell you the cons of it. Actually, Morgan, I'm going to let you start with the cons.
Okay. Well, you know, as I was saying with Arliss Adams,
right,
you could lose readers. That's one of the biggest things against switching genres. Say if you write adult romance novels, those readers probably won't enjoy your YA fantasy series.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, they have kids, like YA fantasy.
Right.
Current readers might not pick up your new book at all, and if they do, they might not enjoy it. This could make your current readers much more discerning about picking up a title of yours in the future, even if it's in a genre that they previously enjoyed. Because, you know, some people are sort of tunnel visioned. They don't have that expansive view, and they figure, well, if the writer writes about this, how could they possibly write a good book about this? And, of course, they have no idea wonderfully creative all of us are.
Well, you know what? I never even thought about it. I mean, until we get a topic and we start talking about it and I research some of this, I don't even think about these things. Like, my first book was dramatic. Mm-hmm. My next one was science fiction. I've also written children's stories. So it never dawned on me that my audience, because first of all, I'm writing to a different audience.
Right, right. Agree.
It never occurred to me that I'm going to even be trying to keep the same audience.
Yeah, but sometimes you have the crossover audience, just like I was kind of kidding around, you know, unless this person who liked your romances had a kid who liked YA fantasy and thought, well, this is a pretty good writer. Let's see what they do on this.
Jamie, I'm going to let you take the next one.
Yeah, another thing, I actually have a friend who wrote a comedy and then decided in the sequel it would be a drama, and her fans were not happy at all. She had a lot
well, that's a little fans. Different, though, because it's a sequel.
Exactly.
Yeah, when so they said you're killing me, they didn't mean you're making me laugh.
Exactly. So that's one problem. Another issue can be if you're writing in multiple genres, it requires more juggling. From a marketing and promotion standpoint, yes. Yeah. You have to market yourself to two different audiences instead of a single cohesive one.
Yeah.
And if you're working on multiple projects at once, you have to handle multiple publishing deadlines, contracts, those sorts of things. You'll have to divide your time between multiple brands.
Well, all sorts of stuff. And I'm thinking of something that you just said. There's a couple things, but one is Evil Dead. If you remember, Evil Dead started out as a spoof originally, the play. And then someone tried to make it dramatic a few years ago, and it did not work. It was a flop. And so now they're back to doing it again, but it's still back to the old spoof on Evil Dead. If you haven't seen that play, by the way, it's hilarious.
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's so funny. All right, Jamie, I'm going to let you take the next one.
Depending on how different your new genre or category is from your previous one, you might have to start a completely new brand. Writing under a pen name, reaching entirely new readers, devoting time to building your brand all over again. Any work that you've done branding yourself up to this point is likely useless for promoting the new book. Essentially, you're starting from scratch.
I speak from experience.
When it comes to writing in multiple genres and trying to learn how to juggle things around, one of the things I think that I lost my train of thought. I'm getting old.
Like I said, good thing you edit.
I know. No, I think it when you're working with multiple projects, I guess what the point here that this person was trying to make is that sometimes it's hard to maintain your characters. But what I do when I write, my characters are real. In my mind, I make them appear to be real in my mind. So I don't really have that problem because as I'm writing about Nikki or I'm writing about Zace or, you know, I'm writing about Daniel or Mary, these are real people in my mind. So I never, when I'm writing one thing to another, I don't mix those characters up. They still maintain their identity. Sometimes I think when people are trying to juggle more than one form of writing, they might be going about it wrong if they're mixing them up. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
No. Jamie, did you follow me on that?
I followed the part about, you know, the characters being real, which I do the same thing. I give them full personalities and histories and stuff. But then you kind of lost me on the mixing them up if writing in different genres.
Well, like, for instance, the first book I wrote was government espionage. Then I switched to science fiction.
Okay.
One is present day and one was past. But the thing is that I don't feel like that I had to worry about juggling, you know, my thought process because they're different type books.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Whereas what they're saying here in this article I got off the internet was that, you know, it requires more juggling. For me, it didn't.
No, I don't. Well, I think the one thing that you do have to do, though, is that you have to be constantly aware of what conditions would be in typical conditions in the genre that you're now writing in, because what works in one genre probably won't work in another. I don't think it's confusing. Yeah, you might have to do a little more research to make it realistic if you're used to writing in one genre and things are different in the new genre. But I don't see where it should be confusing. I mean, you're a writer, you know.
Right.
I think it might be if the person is writing two different projects at the same time.
At the same time.
Right. But I do that, though.
I do, too.
I've always got all new ideas out there, and I just don't have a problem. But maybe it's because we all think differently.
Well, I'm working on two different ones at the same time, and I have trouble sometimes remembering what voice I'm supposed to be writing in.
Uh-huh. I don't because of the fact that I actually visualize these people in my mind as I'm writing. So their characters just pop out, almost like they take over my thinking process for me. I'm one of those who allows the character to guide me when it comes to the writing.
I do, too.
And, I know Grisham says he does not. He doesn't believe that he's the one who guides the character. I'm the opposite of that. I really do let the character guide me. Maybe that's why he's successful, though, and I'm not.
Yeah, well, James, my characters have taken me to places that I never planned on them going. If it's a good direction, hey, they told me what they wanted to do, you know?
Yeah.
And it, in many instances, really enriched the story because it was a thought that I hadn't had.
Yeah.
Or I guess it was my own thought, but I didn't know I was thinking it.
Well, one of the things that we're talking about here is jumping from one genre to the other is that you may have to completely create a whole new brand. And I'm going to use the example I talked to you about it with S.H. Montgomery. We talked about that a few minutes ago, how she wrote historical fiction, and then she went to children's, and she was so concerned about using her name, Sue. It's real easy to do. You just separate them. And we know so many authors in the past who did this. Even Sidney Sheldon, I don't know if – or not Sidney Sheldon, but Louis. We talked about him on the last
Louis
show. Louis L'Amour. He actually didn't just write Westerns. He actually wrote historical fiction, science fiction, and nonfiction. But he's only known for his works as a Western writer.
Yeah,
but,
well, one of my friends, Sue Ann Jafarian, is – I mean, she's writing like four different series with four different disciplines – and she manages to keep them all going and work full-time as a paralegal. Now, how she does that, I don't know. But she's got everything from a hefty paralegal who's an amateur sleuth in one series to a paranormal with a grandmother, So I guess a lot of it, what we're kind of getting down to is it depends on the person themselves. It depends on the writer and how their methodology is and how their imagination goes.
Jamie, when you wrote House Divided, when you wrote those characters, did you have yourself in mind as the character, or did you create a different persona for those?
Well, I write in first person, so yeah, there's a lot of me in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So that would be easy to keep straight in a way, but then if you wrote the one that was about baseball and then you wrote the vampire one. I know that. Yeah, I don't know who you had in mind for that one.
Let me see your fangs.
So how did you keep those separate?
Well, it's not that hard if I'm only working on one project at a time, but right now I'm working on two. I'm in draft 7 of one book and like draft 30 of another. Mm-hmm. And in one of those books, there's actually two different first person narrators. So I'm actually juggling three first-person narrators.
Oh, wow.
And one is a 21-year-old who doesn't have a lot of education. Another one is a 39-year-old who is running this giant con that nobody knows about. And the third one is sort of a lost millennial whose husband has just died, and she's moved back in with her parents. So three very unique people, and they have three very unique voices. And I do have to kind of, take a break and it's almost like method acting, if you will.
Yeah.
Actually be the person while I'm writing it. It can be a challenge.
Yeah.
Writing can become confusing. It's a challenge to juggle multiple genres from a writing perspective. One of the things you have to keep in mind are the conventions of each one and establish and refine vastly different voices or tones, which is what Jamie was just talking about.
Right.
And then at the same time, you're trying... Whoops. At the same time, you're trying to meet readers' expectations in different ways. The amount of versatility required for writing across genres requires a lot of hard work and skill to accomplish it successfully.
And this is kind of where I get a little bit of where we're talking about here, is that in the sense that if you have one reader for a specific book, like name of one of your books.
Incest, Murder, and a Miracle.
Okay. But then you have the guy who, what's the guy that, the heavyset guy who's got the chef hat on? What's that book?
Oh, A Corpse in the Soup.
Okay, that's entirely different. That's an entirely different book.
Right, right.
One and is, right. One so is, if you're trying to meet the demands of all your readers, you're not going to be able
no,
to.
No.
Yeah.
No. In fact, fans of the Silver Sisters mysteries, I would say probably a large portion of them would be absolutely shocked by the true story in Incest, Murder, and a Miracle, because it's very shocking. It shocked America. It was one of the first times in 1986 when the word incest ever appeared in newspaper headlines.
Yeah. Back in the 50s and 60s, you couldn't write in various genres. If you were an author, you had to maintain one standard, unless you created a pseudonym, which we know a lot of famous authors who did that, including Stephen King.
Richard Bachman. That was his real
name. Sidney Sheldon had several pseudonyms. Basically, what they're saying is, we can go out there and market you under a different name if you want to write in that genre, but we're not going to market you under the same name because it's a different audience. And it's still that way today, but I do think that it's changing to where I think people are more open-minded to reading different things. Like, they're not just going to read a drama, or they're not just going to read a science fiction, you know, or a paranormal. They're going to branch out and read various aspects of the industry, I think. I don't know. What do you think, Jamie?
Definitely. I think nowadays, well, there are two types of readers. There are readers that will read anything by their favorite author. And then there are readers that are driven more by the description of the plot. Mm-hmm. And there are so many different ways that books are marketed these days, such as the newsletter BookBub, so much more exposure to books. There's the ads on your Kindle. It's just really an amazing time to be a reader as well as a writer.
Right. So basically, there are no right or wrong answers, and you write for what works best for you.
Exactly.
However, it is important to consider the advantages and disadvantages of the choice in order to decide whether switching genres is right for you. I never considered that either. I'm just one of those who are write something, I'm going to publish whatever I write.
Well, you know, years ago when I was a young pup, I worked for a man who was absolutely brilliant. He had something like 7 PhDs, and his words of wisdom stuck with me. He said, "There's no such thing as the right system. Anything that works for you is a system." Okay. Best-selling author Rebecca Zanetti writes, "A cowboy, a vampire, and a detective walk into a bar." A few years ago, conventional wisdom dictated that an author should only write in one genre, at least until becoming well-established. Well, I think this has changed. With the advent of ebooks and the ability to take some risks, many authors have published across entire genres successfully. So what's fascinating is watching how readers committed to one genre will follow an author into another imaginary realm just because they enjoy that author's work. I found that writing in different genres is a good way to build a fan base quickly, but there are a few key items to keep in mind.
Right. If you have a certain style of writing, because, Jamie, you mentioned you're writing two or three different books right now with different, you know, narratives in the first person. So if they're used to hearing the way you are, seeing the way you write, they might follow you from one book to the other anyway, because
hopefully
they like your style of writing. Actually, that's what happened with Gerard. You know, even though he was writing in different genres when it came to scripts, they read his novel and they liked his style of writing. So it's because of his style of writing that they asked him to do other projects that were outside his realm. So I think if you can maintain your style of writing, it doesn't really matter, or it might not matter. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Jamie, I'm going to let you take the next one.
Okay. Choose the right cover for each book. A cover needs to be more than intriguing and wonderful. It needs to visually describe the book.
Yours definitely describes the book. On all three. And I think a lot of people miss the point on that. Sometimes someone will just put a plain cover there with just a color and maybe a line or two, you know, just something abstract. But that doesn't tell me anything about the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's just an abstract book, it doesn't say a thing.
Yeah, well, you know, with Incest, Murder, and a Miracle, Cheryl and Rob Cuccio had the ultimate input on the cover. And they wanted to depict coming out of the dark into the light, because you don't have to be defined by the bad things that have happened to you. And as we had finally settled on the design of the cover with the cover designer, they came up with one more thing that was very interesting, because she had used a stock photo of the couple walking into the light out of the dark tunnel. And they said, could it be us? Could you use a photograph of us walking out of the tunnel? Mm-hmm. And so the book designer told them exactly how to set the settings on the camera and everything else. And it is the back silhouette of the two of them walking out of the tunnel.
Wow.
Well, and also you use the title a lot for the cover, which yes. is what, I mean, those three words, incest, murder, and a miracle, kind of like tell you this is the story.
Right.
So that in itself can work.
Right. And their working title was 10 Minutes More, which didn't tell you anything about the story.
No.
I mean, what that related to was the fact that Rob was dead for over half an hour, and that the doctors finally said they'd try for 10 minutes more, and he came back to life at 8. But if you don't know the story, you don't know what the title meant. Whereas, yes, you're right, James. I mean, this is absolutely what's in the book, Incest, Murder, and a Miracle.
And the other thing that's really important is to be complete in the back cover. It's surprising how many people who write something for the back, they really don't have a clue, you know, but what they've written, the reader's not going to have a clue of what that book's about. Sometimes you can't be explicit enough. Other times you may tell too much. And we had someone on last show who said that she doesn't like a book that tells you the whole story in the back, because what's the point of reading it now?
Yeah.
Well, it should have a teaser, you know, something that grabs your attention and makes you want to know more. And in fact, we just changed the back cover on Incest, Murder, and a Miracle. The new one will be available within about a week, because with all the TV appearances that they did, we changed the back cover to show a photo of them with Dr. Oz and him saying fantastic, which is what his quote was on the book. And then we added quotes from Discovery ID producer and the Inside Edition producer, mm-hmm. and we shortened the synopsis of what the story was about, because, you know, there's one other thing there, is that second party recommendation
right.
is always very strong. And when you have it from three very prestigious sources, that's going to help your book a lot more than a lot of narrative.
Well, if a book itself includes a couple of genres, which I know one of yours does, Jamie, they used to say it's a no-no a few years ago to have different genre mixes, but now they say it's perfectly okay, because I know yours, it's a romance, but also paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay to do that, because people actually, they like that type of thing, especially in the romance industry.
Yeah, romance can go well with just about anything.
Yeah.
All right, Morgan, I'm going to let you take the next one.
Okay, so you need to let your voice remain steady. The point is, don't change your voice just to change genres. Sometimes you have, usually, you might have to change the voice of your characters,
right.
but your narrator has a certain style, and if you want to cross, it's probably okay to do that, because your own voice is what makes your writing unique. It can be constant through the different genres that you tackle. A year or so ago, a rumor had it that paranormal romances were soft, and a few of my friends turned to writing historical, some of them quite successfully and some not so much. The ones who struggled to change their natural writing styles and voice in order to sound more historical, well, they didn't do all that well. The successful ones took their established voice and style and added them to the elements of a historical book. So it goes back to the advice our mothers gave us in kindergarten. Honey, just be yourself.
Yeah. All right, Jamie, I'll let you take the next one.
Learn the genre you're writing. Even though your voice and style should remain all yours, different genres do require different pacing, narrative versus action, and plot points.
And I think that's important. For me, some of that is just common sense, too. Like, if you're writing a dramatic piece, you know, you understand you have to keep the pace going.
Sure.
If you're writing science fiction, you have to attract that science fiction writer to imagine all the things that we know don't exist. Well, they may exist, but in what we personally know, you know. So you do have to maintain a certain...
Are you saying you're really an alien?
I am an alien.
Behind that mask?
Yeah. Just wait till you read my next book. all right. And Morgan, I'm going to let you take the next one.
Okay. I guess what we're getting at is, you know, don't be afraid to take a risk or two. It's pretty easy to get comfortable in a genre once you build a fan base, but writing is about being creative. And being creative is about taking chances. So, yeah, you might fail. Get back up and try again. This business is about persistence, dedication to craft, and imagination. So let them all fly. I posted one of my early rejection note cards on my Facebook page the other day to encourage a couple of folks to keep on writing. And one fan asked me how I kept writing after being rejected. The question caught me off guard, and there was only one answer. I kept writing because I'm the only one who can make myself quit. And quitting was never an option. So if you're writing, you are already ahead of the game. Don't hold yourself back now.
It's easy to give up in this industry. And Jamie, you actually self-published two of your books. Morgan, you've self-published several of your books.
Mm-hmm. After being with a traditional publisher.
After being with a traditional publisher. It is very easy to say, I can't do this. Let me tell you, I started publishing a long time ago. And when I started publishing, it was so much more difficult than it is today. And it was hard for me to force myself to get out there and do everything I needed to do just to get it published. Not marketed, published.
Mm-hmm.
I was uncertain. You never know who you're dealing with on the phone. Now you can deal with them on the internet. Back then, there was no internet. Like I said, I've never stopped myself from writing what I want to write. So.
I haven't either.
Jamie?
You know, I have a few times. I have a lot of ideas, and then some of them just don't necessarily seem as marketable as others. And then there are ideas that I have that aren't, maybe I'm not the right person to write this story in today's environment. And that's okay, too. There's always another idea.
Mm-hmm. I started out writing a script, and I started out writing as a hobby. It was not something I ever intended to do to make money at ever. I still don't. But anyway, and I actually wrote this as, it was just something I did when I was out of work. I think, Morgan, you probably heard this story. I was out of work here at one of the hotels. I stayed with a friend. She was watching this soap opera. And after 3 days of watching this soap opera with her, I said, you know, this is so stupid. We can write this well. We can write every bit as good as this. So we started writing, and I actually wrote something that I thought was just a hobby. And I took it to work one day, and someone I was working with read it and said, can I send this to my brother? I don't know who anyone was in Hollywood back then. This was we're talking about the 80s, early 80s. She submitted it to her brother. He liked it. He said, I'd like to take this and make it a 2-hour pilot. Do you think you can create 16 episodes based on this pilot? So then we went back to the drawing board. We still had no idea what was being handed to us or potentially could have been handed to us. So we went and created 16 stories based on the characters that were in the original story, all dealing with like a half hour, kind of a dark drama, or a sitcom, I mean. We submitted those to him, he liked it, and he started pushing it to the studios. Now, the only reason it was never picked up is because there was something out there similar. And back then, if one studio had something, the other studio didn't want it. They didn't compete in that way. Today, they do that. Back then, they did not. So it was dropped. But the point was, and I had no idea. I was just writing. It was a hobby. I had no clue. First of all, I had no clue how important it was to have that contact. Sometimes you just have to write to be writing. Some people do write for financial reasons. I've actually had someone on who's a professional article writer for newspapers and magazines, and he'll flat out tell you, I'll just write an article just for the money. If that's what you want to do, and then you're going to make a career at writing, and you're serious about it, and you can get that serious about it, fantastic. But I believe you should just be writing for the pure enjoyment of it. Jamie, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think if you're not enjoying it, it's going to be tough. But I also think that if you need to be professional about it too. And sometimes you need to sit down and force yourself to do the day's writing, even if you don't feel like it.
Right. What about you, Morgan? You write almost every day.
I do. I write every day. And I think you have to enjoy what you're doing. Even if it's a thing of writing for money, somewhere along the line you have to get some pleasure out of that, or it's just going to be drudgery. Of course, right. It also pays the bills.
Well, but also there's different ways of thinking about it. When you write with your sister, to me that would probably be more for fun, or when you write your own individual work. But when you write for someone else, when you're collaborating,
Right.
Usually that's because they're asking you to help write their story, and it is for financial reasons.
Yes. Yes and no. On the incest murder and a miracle. We've been lucky with the exposure it's gotten, and it isn't all luck. I mean, Cheryl and Rob are amazing about getting their book out there.
But they actually came to you to write it, though.
They came to me to write it, but not so much for the financial gain.
Okay.
They wanted to finally, after 30 years, tell their story because they have a commitment to help people who are victims. And they wanted their story to get out there so people would understand that you don't have to be defined by the bad things that have happened to you. And Lord knows they've both had their share of bad things. And since the book came out, people from all over the world have contacted them, thanking them and saying, you've given me permission to tell other people about what happened to me.
Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time, so we're down to the last minute of the show. So, Jamie, where can we learn more about your work?
Two places. I have a website, and the address there is http://jamiedeese.com. And my name is spelled J-A-M-I, D as in David, E-I-S-E. And I am also blogging on Blogger, and the address there is jamiedeese.blogspot.com.
And Morgan?
www.morganstjames, and that's STJAMES-author.com. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter, all of that under Morgan St. James. But when you go to my main website, I maintain other blogs and so forth, and there are links to all of them on my main website.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank our guest, Jamie Deese, along with my panelist, Morgan St. James. You can find this video on YouTube.com. It's going to be interesting. But anyway, you can find us on YouTube at YouTube.com/aspectsofwriting. Aspects of writing is all one word. Or you can go to my website, aspectsofwriting.com, and there you'll find links to all of our shows, the syndicated show on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Roku TV, and AM/FM 24/7. And there's also like 14 terrestrial stations that are listed there as well. We archive all the shows on our website after it's aired, so you'll also find it on Aspects of Writing. So until next week, this is your host, James Kelly, reminding you, if you can dream it, you can write it. Thank you so much, Jamie. Thank you, Morgan.
Yes, thank you. Great talking with you, Jamie.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to Aspects of Writing. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss every aspect of the writing industry. Until then, if you can dream it, you can write it.